the world to turn around. All our hopes have come to be, and people gather around. They are all they can bring. I know about the wind with that. I only learn a song to sing. The revolution starts now.
Good afternoon, Richmond. Welcome to Indie Media Live, where Richmond comes to hear what democracy sounds like. We have no corporate sponsorship and no corporate control, so I hope you'll stay tuned to hear what a difference this makes in bringing you the news. We want to encourage you and empower you and inspire you to become part of our community's conversation, because a democracy can thrive only when everyone's voice is heard. I'm your host, Rebecca Ferris, and I'm here every Tuesday introducing you to people in our community who are passionately involved in the issues and causes that directly affect you and your family. We have an amazing show for you today. Remember that you can always stream this or any of the other wonderful programming on WRIR 24/7 at WRIR.org. And we'd love to hear from you at our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. This show is going to be archived there shortly after we wrap up today at 1 o'clock, and this show also replays on WRIR.org on the World Wide Web every Wednesday at 2:30, so you can just listen to us over and over and over again. We have such an amazing show for you today, because guess what? Today is Crossover Day, and for those of you who are regular listeners to Indie Media Live, you know that this is always one of the big shows of the year for me, one of the most important shows of the year, Crossover Day in the Commonwealth of Virginia's General Assembly. Steve, I'm going to ask you, Steve Northup is here. He's the Executive Director of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. I'm going to ask you to help our listeners with a really brief summary of what Crossover Day means. Our General Assembly is bicameral. We have two houses. And so if you want to take it from there and help our listeners understand what that means in the legislative process.
Sure, Rebecca, I'll try. Generally, Crossover Day means that bills that have been passed by one house of our General Assembly then literally cross over to the other house of the General Assembly for consideration initially by the appropriate committee in that particular body and then by the entire body. So, for example, a bill that has been passed by the Senate of Virginia. Let's say it got passed yesterday. Today it will cross over and it will be heard by the appropriate committee in the Virginia House of Delegates and then eventually passed on by the Virginia House of Delegates. If the bill is then approved by the Virginia House of Delegates, it is deemed enacted and then it needs to be signed by the governor in order to become law.
So this is that whole process moving toward the governor's desk.
That's correct.
All right, good job. So today is Crossover Day. It's the day when the legislation that originated in the Senate and went through the subcommittees and committees and passed will now head to the House, and likewise the legislation that originated in the House and passed through subcommittees and committees will now head to the Senate. And I am so fortunate today. I wish it were TV today so that they could see, so that all the listeners could see who we have here. But Claire Gastañaga is here. She's with the Virginia Coalition of Latino Organizations, and we're going to be talking about some LGBT legislation as well, right, Claire?
Yep.
Thank you for being here. And Andrea Miller is here. She is the National Field Coordinator for Progressive Democrats of America and the co-chair of Progressive Democrats of America in Virginia. And thank you for being here, Andrea. You have some amazing news for us. I'm really excited about that. And also Gina Boyle is here. She's an advocate for the domestic violence victims with the Virginia Sexual and Domestic Violence Action Alliance. Gina, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you've already met Steve Northup. And so let's just jump right in. Andrea, why don't you tell us, we'll start back chronologically, legislation that Act was introduced in the 1970s. Let's talk about what just happened with the Equal Rights Amendment.
Well, the Virginia Senate just ratified the Equal Rights Amendment for Virginia. The full Senate hasn't actually heard that bill since 1982. And this would basically be the constitutional amendment that says women have equal rights. The only equal rights that women have in Virginia, or actually in this country, is we have the right to vote. That's it. That is the only constitutional right. Because when they drafted the Constitution, it says men. It doesn't say anything at all about women. We're not in it.
Well, some of us women remember wearing out a whole lot of shoe leather back in the 70s, getting 35 of the necessary 38 states to approve the Equal Rights Amendment.
Right. And a lot of people believe that the ERA is dead. The ERA is not dead because it's a constitutional amendment. So there is no time limit on when we actually have to ratify. So we're going to have an opportunity on Monday, Valentine's Day. It should come up in the Privileges and Elections Committee in the House of Delegates. So we have the vote in the Senate. We're coming up in the House on Valentine's Day. What a gift for women of the U.S.
If our listeners would like to let their voices be heard, I think Googling Virginia General Assembly is probably a great way to do that, and then you're taken right to the webpage, or conview.state.va.us if you want to find out who your legislator is and how to get in touch with them to let your opinion be heard on the passage of the Equal Rights Amendment in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Or any of the other legislation that we're going to be talking about today.
And we're going to keep a lot of information about the ERA right on the front page of PDA Virginia. So that website is www.pdava.org.
And we'll have all of that up on our blog, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. Andrea, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for being here. Keep on keeping on, right? Gina Boyle, advocate for domestic violence victims with the Virginia Sexual and Domestic Violence Action Alliance, is here. Gina, why don't you bring our listeners up to date on the legislation that deals with this most important issue that touches all of us, really?
Certainly. Thanks, Rebecca. We're very excited because there are actually two issues that are getting a lot of attention this year in the General Assembly. One deals with access to protective orders. This is an issue that came to light after a horrible murder at UVA last year and really brought to the attention of the General Assembly that victims of dating violence, stalking, and sexual assault have a lot harder time getting access to protective orders in Virginia. So we took a hard look at the Virginia Code, and there are two bills advancing today. They will be crossing over in the General Assembly that will improve access to protective orders.
Gina, before we go on with that legislation, just for our listeners real quickly, could you explain what a protective order is?
Absolutely. A protective order is a civil order often issued by a magistrate or a judge that where someone who is experiencing certain acts of violence can ask the state to and the court to tell a person to stay away, to not contact, it just orders them to do a number of things.
Okay, good job. So we have two bills that are crossing over today?
Correct.
Okay.
One in the House and one in the Senate. We consider both of those bills to be very strong, and we're really looking forward to the final product. But the message is that victims of dating violence especially will have equal access and equal protections to protective orders in Virginia, which is a very big win for us. The other bill...
And does that bill have a number?
We have two. The House bill is House Bill 2063, and the Senate bill is Senate Bill 1222.
Okie doke.
And there's a second bill that we're very excited that is passing this year, which is, it deals with the address confidentiality program in Virginia. That's a program that's run through the Attorney General's office. It helps victims of domestic violence who are hoping to relocate and have their address hidden. This is in the most dire of cases where we really need to essentially hide a victim. And there's a program run through the Attorney General's office that allows them to have their mail and everything sent to the Attorney General's office and then forwarded on to their actual address. So that is moving both the House and the Senate and has received unanimous support thus far to make it statewide. Currently, it's only in 18 jurisdictions.
Do those bills have numbers?
Yes. House Bill 1757 and Senate Bill 1199.
And we'll put those numbers up on our blog as well, indiemedialive.blogspot.com. If you would like to let your legislators know how you feel about these bills or any of the other bills that we're going to be talking about today, you can Google Virginia General Assembly or conview.state.va.us. That will help you find out who your legislators are and how to get in touch with them. Gina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, really. And you were talking about an 800 number that you wanted
to... Yes, I wanted to let everyone listening today know, if you or someone you know needs help, we do have a 24-hour free and confidential hotline. It is 1-800-838-8238.
And that number will be up on our blog as well. And you have a website, Gina?
Yes, it's www.vsdvalliance.org.
vsdvalliance.org. And that is the Virginia
Sexual and Domestic Violence Action Alliance.
Yes, wonderful. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for being here. And so now we're moving on. It is, 17 minutes before the hour. And I thank all of you for listening today. This is Crossover Day on Indie Media Live, one of the most important shows of the year. We are talking about the legislation that has passed in either the House or the Senate in the General Assembly. And now we'll go to the opposite House. And if passed there, we'll head toward the governor's desk. So let's turn now to the Virginia Coalition of Latino Organizations. Claire Guthrie Gastanaga is here. Claire, it's good to see you. It's been
a while.
A few years, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. I don't think my mic's on.
I think it is. Yeah, no, you just turned yourself off.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I know it's counterintuitive. It's on when the light is red.
All right, good.
All right, here we go. So, Claire, you're going to talk to us about the bills dealing with the Virginia Coalition of Latino Organizations, some that you support and some that you don't. And you're also going to be talking to us about the lesbian and gay and bisexual, transgendered and queer bills that are going through the legislature as well.
I'm privileged to represent both Bacalhau and Equality Virginia in the legislature, so that's
Thank
why
you.
I
So you're going to have to talk
topics.
Really fast.
And I will have to talk fast because unfortunately there are 10 bills that are coming out of the House today.
Oh my goodness, I don't know if we can touch all of them.
That are negative for the immigrant communities.
Okay.
And just to highlight a couple of the most important, the bills are, there are a couple of bills on education, there are several law enforcement bills, there's a social services bill, and there are a number of what are called e-verify bills, which have to do with requiring businesses to use a not yet ready for prime time system that the federal government has that theoretically allows you to get reliable information about whether somebody's qualified to work. We oppose all the bills that are coming out of the House, all 10 of them, and the two that I think we want to highlight today are House Bill 1465, which is a bill that would say that public colleges and universities and the State Board of Community Colleges must adopt written policies prohibiting the enrollment of any person who is in the country without authority. One of the most I mean, that bill punishes children for the actions of their parents. It affects the ability of kids who came here when they were very young. They've thought of themselves as Americans. Many of them didn't even know what their status was until they were 17 or 18 and applying for college. It punishes them because their parents brought them here and says you have no future educational opportunity after elementary and secondary school. One of the most disheartening things is that the patron said on the floor in describing the bill yesterday that it's his intent to have a state law that would prohibit the admission of these kids even if the federal government were to pass the DREAM Act, making it specifically possible for kids to go through a process of seeking to adjust their status by becoming college-educated, productive citizens who could become, you know, taxpayers. And that's particularly disheartening. So we are hoping that the Senate will kill that bill when it comes across, but I expect it to pass the House today by a large margin. The other bill that we want to highlight is a law enforcement bill. It's House Bill 2332. That bill would make every single police officer in the Commonwealth, whether a state police officer, a county police officer, a city police officer, or a college and university campus police officer, responsible to ask every single person they arrest and take into custody questions about their citizenship status. Then rolls into a very subjective system where, based on those questions, the officer makes a judgment about whether he believes the person is in the country without authority and reports that to a judge who decides if he believes the officer, and then that person is held without bond. Now, I mean, lest you think that that's not serious, I'm married to a guy who's a Puerto Rican, which means he's a citizen by birth. If he leaves the house without his wallet, gets picked up doing 45 and a 25, which would be reckless driving and potentially a misdemeanor, doesn't have his wallet on him because he forgot it, he was just going down to the corner store, he might automatically be determined by an officer making a subjective assessment that because he has a foreign-sounding name and an accent and no ID, that that's probable cause to believe he's in the country without authority. That kind of subjective assessment is an invitation to bias-based policing, not to mention the fact that mandating this statewide imposes an unfunded mandate on every locality. It cost Prince William $4 million and 5,000 hours of training time minimum to implement a similar policy in that county, and counties that want to do it could have done it and have chosen not to, and so the state legislature mandating it doesn't make a lot of sense at this point.
Yeah, I thought this sounded like Prince William.
Well, it is, and
because we've heard a lot about that.
It's carried by a delegate from Prince William,
okay,
who basically is saying it's working for us, so you know everybody else should do it too. Now, working for them is an interesting way of describing something that's cost them a lot of money, driven them to the point where they have the highest foreclosure rates in the Commonwealth, and resulted, and this may have been the purpose, in a 23% reduction in the number of persons who are foreign-born living in the county. So,
and it also sounds like Arizona.
Well, it was the laboratory for Arizona. The Prince William Ordinance was the laboratory for Senate Bill 1079 and was in place before the Arizona statute. So Virginia in this area, I have to say, has been a leader, I put that in quotes, rather than a follower on these kinds of issues. And as I say, there are 10 bills that are negative. There are a couple that are still floating around that might have a positive impact. A couple dealing with human trafficking and strengthening our laws to interdict that horrible crime, particularly with respect to kids, and the potential for there to be some greater fairness in our Medicaid program in terms of access by people who are lawfully present to benefits for their children and for some adults. So a couple of positive things. And then one thing on which both the organizations I represent have concurred is Senate Bill 747, which would for the first time codify protections against discrimination for all state employees. Most people don't understand that state employees have no protection in the code from any kind of discrimination, whether it's discrimination based on race or national origin or gender or age or disability. The only protection state employees have been provided by an executive order. And while Warner and Kane had executive orders that also extended those protections to GLBT employees, Governor McDonald didn't include GLBT people in his executive order and later put out an executive directive, which has even less meaning than order. Senate Bill 747 is a bill that would change all that for all employees, all state employees, and it passed the Senate 2218 and is now pending in the House. And Equality Virginia, together with People of Faith for Equality in Virginia, will be doing some actions next Monday, Valentine's Day, and the 15th, designed to bring attention to the importance of passing that bill. And that's something that the Virginia Coalition of Latino Organizations also supports because it also applies to national origin discrimination.
So this is a bill that supports non-discrimination.
In state employment.
The private sector. And it would codify this for the first time.
Right. The private sector is far ahead of the state in this. I mean, every one of the 10 major employers in Virginia has a policy against discriminating against gay and lesbian employees. The state doesn't have one. We're so far behind that the Joint Commission that reviews accreditation of hospitals uses whether the hospital has a policy prohibiting discrimination against gays and lesbians as one of the factors in whether a hospital should be accredited. But our state government doesn't afford those protections to our employees. And then there's a companion bill to that would also expand availability or the potential for the state to expand availability of benefits to GLBT people, which is Senate Bill 1122.
Now, who was one of the supporters of the non-discrimination legislation?
Well, our patron on the Senate side is Senator McEachin.
Okay.
The bill has been patroned in the past by a combination of Republican and Democratic patrons on the Senate side, including former Senator Jean Marie Devilites Davis and Senators Locke, Mamie Locke, and Louise Lucas. So it's had a lot of mothers and fathers. And the current patron is Senator McEachin, who has carried it last year and this year and is doing a phenomenal job as an advocate to make sure that state employees are protected.
Again, if you'd like to let your legislators know how you feel about this legislation, you can Google Virginia General Assembly and you'll be taken to a place where you can find out who your legislator is and how to get in touch with her. Or conview.state.va.us is another good website for that. Claire, are there any other bills that are affecting
Go back to the immigration issue for just a second, because there is a bill of House Bill 1421 of Delegate Albos, which may have a particularly insidious effect for victims and witnesses of crime.
Yeah, I was reading about, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a bill that says that nobody can stand in the way of any individual employee of a state or local government who wants to participate in the enforcement of federal immigration laws. And there are many police departments across the Commonwealth that have implemented what are called general orders, telling their police people that they shouldn't ask for a victim or a witness's immigration status as a routine inquiry when they're investigating a crime. And that's important because you want folks to cooperate with police and keep us all safe by having community policing work. And right now, the way 1421 is drafted, it potentially holds out the possibility that individual officers could violate those general orders without being subject to any kind of discipline or without the police chief in those localities being able to hold them accountable.
This is the so-called anti-sanctuary legislation?
Yeah, that's the way the patron of the bill describes it, as anti-sanctuary. But we have no sanctuary cities or localities in Virginia, so it's attacking a problem that doesn't exist and attacking it in a way that's going to create a real downside risk for all of us and make us less safe and put victims and witnesses to crime at risk in terms of their own personal safety.
Well, thank you so much for bringing us up to date on that. And there are a couple of websites as well for you for this legislation.
You can go to www.v, as in Victor, ACOLAO.org for information on the bills that affect the immigrant community, and www.equalityvirginia.org for information on the bills that are pending that would affect the GLBT community. And we encourage folks in the GLBT community, please, to go to the website and find out about what's going on February 14th and 15th to develop support for those bills.
Good. Well, thank you so much for that. And now let's turn to Steve Northup, who was here before as a member of the board of Virginians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty during the Teresa Lewis situation, and now you return as the executive director. And I want you to tell our listeners about what happened with the Trigger Man bill, because we've been talking about it here on the show every week, and we have some news.
Yes, we do, Rebecca. Thank you. And I'm pleased to be able to talk about a bill that's not going to be crossing over this year, and that is this year's effort to eliminate, at least in part, the rule that we call in Virginia the Trigger Man rule, which is a bit of a misnomer, but I don't think we have time to get into that right now. Basically, under Virginia law, accomplices to most crimes can be prosecuted for the crimes themselves, but there's an exception for capital murder. And accomplices to most capital murder crimes can only be prosecuted for first-degree murder. That's what's called the Trigger Man exception to liability for capital murder. And there's been an effort in recent years in the General Assembly to do away with that rule, and therefore to permit accomplices in capital murder crimes to be also prosecuted for capital murder and be eligible for the death penalty. There was a...
In other words, an expansion of the death penalty.
It would be an expansion and potentially a very significant expansion of the death penalty. Senate Bill 1200 was introduced this year. It would have eliminated this rule in the cases of rape murder, which is one of our categories of capital murder in Virginia. The bill was taken up by the Senate Courts of Justice Committee last week, and by a vote of 8-7, the bill was defeated last Wednesday in the Senate Courts of Justice Committee.
Skin of your teeth.
Yes, it was very close. Well, we anticipated that it was going to be close because we had been meeting with the senators on the committee, and we knew it would come down to one or two very crucial votes. I wanted to say for your listeners, Rebecca, because I know we're sitting right now in Richmond, Virginia, and probably the most eloquent spokesperson against this bill at the hearing last Wednesday was Don McEachin, who made the very important point that now that we know from the innocence movement and we know about the wrongful convictions that have occurred in our criminal justice system and the very real, the reality that innocent people do sometimes get convicted of very serious crimes in our criminal justice system, we should not, in light of that knowledge, be expanding capital punishment and thereby increasing the risk that we could execute an innocent person, which I think most Americans, most Virginians, would find awful.
If you'd like to let Senator McEachin or any of your other legislators know how you feel about this issue, Google Virginia General Assembly. And we're going to have, well, VADP.org up on our blog. We don't have any bills for you.
That's correct. But we do have on our website, www.vadp.org, we have the names and the contact information for the 8 senators on the Courts of Justice Committee who voted against this bill last week. So if you wish to contact any of them and express your thoughts about their action last week, please feel free to do so.
And I just would thank all of you so much for all the work you're doing in the General Assembly on behalf of all of the citizens of the Commonwealth. And thank you for being here today. I know you're crazy busy, but it meant an awful lot to an awful lot of us. Thank you for being here. So as we wrap up now, I want to remind you that on these cold days and these frigid nights, don't forget the dogs and the cats in the cold. They suffer. And that idea that they're made to stay out in all types of weather is a myth. So bring them in. Basic bottom line is if you would like to go inside and get warm, they would like to go inside and get warm. And if you're cold and miserable outside, they're cold and miserable outside. So please remember that they depend on you. And take good care of them. Be kind to yourselves. Be kind to each other. Be kind to the animals and to the planet. But don't be silent, because silence is the voice of complicity. Until next week, on behalf of Tim and all the other wonderful volunteers at WRIR, we wish you peace.